And we are back with episode 262 of The Critical Myth. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville. And wonderful thing, these books. I've just rediscovered them.
And this is Gary from Jacksonville. I have my Christmas stuff all put away. I've caught up on recordings, on books, on comic books. I even got to do some stuff around the house. And please, television, come back to me.
And this is Bronstone from Australia. And the downside of just oodles and oodles of DVDs is that the television consumption really doesn't slow down, even when it ought to.
So how exactly is it working that while your entire country is melting, you can still manage to watch television? And don't you stick to the furniture after about 5 seconds?
With great difficulty.
Yeah.
Well, thank goodness they don't have VHS tapes, so they don't melt.
Yeah.
I think this is pretty much the nail in the coffin for pre-DVD technology. Yeah, you know you're in it's going to be a warm one when the Bureau of Meteorology has to come up with a new color for the temperature chart.
I love that. I just love that when I saw that. Oh, jeez, that's so good.
Yeah, because, you know, as I said in my comments when I saw that, Australians can never do anything halfway. You know, we had a drought here in our southwest last summer, and so, of course, you guys had to outdo us. Yeah.
Go big or go home.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, while your home is still there and not a big slab of glass.
So, yeah, before we burned it down.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that big rock in the middle of the outback is now roughly distributed across the entire western part of Australia. It's now just a very thin layer of magma. Anyhow, yes.
So for all your glass needs.
That's right. You've got a new cottage industry. Yes, we're selling off pieces of our country, literally. All right. Well, we were doing that
before, but it was in the form of uranium and coal.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes
this is
exactly
probably
moment.
Better.
Yes. All right. Well, obviously, as Gary had mentioned, and as our rambling maybe is telling you, we're still in that early part of the year where it's right smack dab between the fall season and the winter and spring season. And more than probably any time in the last 5 to 10 years, there has been hardly anything new during this period of time. It's been, about a 3-week drought here where we've had just a handful of shows to watch. So, yeah, it doesn't help when shows decide to wait like a month before they come back onto the air for no apparent reason. But
I'd be happy with a month.
Jeez. Yeah, right?
Yeah, look at NBC schedule coming up as we'll talk about. What are they pushing, almost April?
Some of them, yes, they are. But that'll be next episode. This time, we are going to belatedly talk about maybe some of the swag that we managed to get from our various family and friends during the holidays, and then what we've been up to during this dry patch for the television season. But as usual, we have the disclaimer that we will very likely stray into spoilers, into whatever it is that we're talking about, and we can't tell you up front what it'll be because we're not sure ourselves. So just be forewarned, we'll try to give you some idea what the topic is going to be at any given time, but you could be spoiled because, we're going to have to discuss something, so there you go. But let's see, who wants to jump in first and let us know how it's been, what you got over the holidays, and what you've been doing since then? Not all at once. Really.
Fine, you chickens, I'll go first. Anyway. let's see. I don't know if I...
See, Edmund, it worked.
Yes. Rats. Play it again. Let's see. I've been up to a bunch of things. I unfortunately did not get to travel at all during the holidays, so I stayed home, which gave me ample time to catch up on a variety of things. I've started a Babylon 5 rewatch. I'm about middleway through season 1 right now. And I know we do talk about that show because that's sort of what joined most of us together, at least initially. It is a show that you can go back and watch a second or third time, and you seem to get more out of it each time. I'll take the honest pledge and say that this is now my probably sixth full rewatch, and I still get little bits and pieces out of the show, so I'm rather enjoying it. As far as other TV issues for Christmas, we got, I'm not sure if I discussed it before, but we got the Voyagers DVD. I think they only had the single season of the show where it was the man and the boy traveling to fix historical wrongs that went on. My kids are really getting a kick out of that. They liked it a lot. On the book front, I've been catching up. I finished the latest Dresden Files book. That was Cold Days, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Cold Days. Mm-hmm. And I liked it. I won't say it was the best book that I've read out of the series, and I felt it in some ways got a little bit he just seemed to throw stuff in a sense I felt to just throw stuff in. And so I didn't feel it was the best book, but still worthy to the ongoing series. I believe it's the 13th in the series, if you want to include the some of the compilation short stories. I'm trying to what else have I done lately? I've been starting also Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I'm only on my first disc on that because I decided to take up Babylon 5 in the meantime. But and it's a little slower for the first season. I'm having a hard time with it. But people tell me, including the host, co-host here, that it's well worth the run. So I will hang in there. I suppose it's a bit like Babylon 5 in that respect. What else can I have done? I recently watched a movie, and I wasn't expecting it. It was I watched Real Steel with my children. We try to have a family movie night here once a week, and it was with Hugh Jackman, and I hadn't seen it in the theaters. And I have to say, it was a nice little show. It wasn't, you know, crazy deep, but you know, everybody in my family, we were watching it, rooting for them, and it was really good. It was a little profanity, but no real sexual situations or nudity. And so for a kid show, it was pretty good. And it's nice. It wasn't the over-the-top robot porn that a Transformers film can be, but it had enough there for us, so we really enjoyed it a lot.
Mm. So Bronston, what do you think of the idea of Cold Days not being quite up to the typical level for the Dresden Files? What was your reaction to it? Because I know you finished it too, so I'll let you take your first stab at it.
It depends on what you mean by the usual standard, I guess. Mm-hmm. I think I don't think it was any worse than any other Dresden Files book. It had a bunch of big plot developments and a bunch of big reveals. And for the first, like they've this book did for what I'm assuming is the second half of the series what Grave Peril, the third book, did for the first half, in that it kind of sets up what's probably going to be the major conflict going forward. Mm-hmm. And filling in a big chunk of the backstory, and I really dug that. I really dug a ton of the reveals, how they brought in a lot of little elements from books past and made them crazy important, like finding out the significance of things like the island and the wardens and Merlin, the gatekeeper, and just stuff like that was cool. Wow.
I mean, I like the concepts. It just seems like it was like thrown in there with a shovel, though. I mean, they just literally slammed so many dangling plot threads and things that you were always curious about, and it seems shoveled in rather than set up or laid in a entertaining manner. It seemed like they were just throwing all these things. And yes, I've read the whole series, so I knew what they were doing and I understood it. And I was curious about this and wondered about that. But at the same time, it was like overload. They were just. I felt like it was jammed in. And I guess maybe for a high water point, you know, I consider maybe like Turncoat to be my like perfect Dresden Files book. But that's me. And so that's sort of my high watermark for the series. But I just, like I said, it just felt like they jammed too much into the latest book.
For me, I kind of felt a little differently because I really like this idea that all these disparate pieces of the puzzle that have just been kind of out there, even some things that never really needed to have another layer to them, because, you know, something like the meaning of the gatekeeper, there was really no need for there to be an explanation for that. And yet, looking back on it, it is one of those things that you go, oh, I guess that is a little unusual for there to be that title, and what would it mean? Plus the fact that Butcher has been saying for a while now that there always has been a larger context to everything that's going on, and that the second half of the series was going to get into it. So, yeah, that to me, it actually, I didn't have that feeling. But I mean, obviously, it's all a matter of taste, so whether or not it was too much too fast, maybe one could debate. I just know that I was left at the end going, just kind of with my jaw on the floor, because one would usually think that the circumstance that he finds himself in at the beginning of the book, being so extreme, would have to be resolved by the end, of course, right? Instead, it's basically doubled down on.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think about the fact that, you know, Harry was absolved of his doom of Damocles, and then had it reapplied when Molly went off the reservation, and they were both under the doom. And so how – I don't think it's a matter of the of the wizards now being coming after them so much as them being tacked on the board as enemies number one and two.
They barely touched on. It felt like they barely touched on that aspect of the Dresden Files universe. I mean, there was just so much of the fairy stuff, and Harry kind of reintegrating into his own life in, you know, some ways more successful than others. That there are just huge big chunks of mythology that I'm looking forward to them dealing with in future books. But as for a lot of the stuff they revealed in this book, a huge chunk of it had been very heavily foreshadowed throughout the series. I mean, the job of the gatekeeper, that had been, like, someone had said that at some point previously. Like, going into this book, if you'd read all the ones previously, like, you knew. Except then you get into this book and you sort of get to see him in action. You realize that simply saying, oh, this is what he does, and then seeing what he does, two completely separate things. It's like saying the Grand Canyon is a big hole in the ground. It's accurate, but does not begin to cover the scope of what's actually going on. And there were quite a number of reveals in that particular storyline that went the same direction. And then things that are related from previous books that they didn't touch on at all. That I'm looking forward to them picking up. So I just think it did a lot of heavy lifting for the mythology of the Dresden Files, and personally I think it did in a really, really good way, and it set up all kinds of cool things to deal with down the line.
Yeah, I would imagine that the next book would have to start to explore the ramifications of the last three. I mean, it's been so heavily focused on Harry and his situation that it really hasn't had the time or the scope to get into all of how the rest of the world is dealing with this. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. That's for sure. I mean, the new status alone is enough to really throw some curveballs into things that you expected. I mean, going back to changes, it seemed like things were on a pretty good course for Dresden and Murphy, but wow. I mean,
yeah, that took a right turn.
It took a right turn, and while I can't exactly say that I wouldn't be jealous of Harry if things turned out the way that mythologically they should, it's certainly going to cause some drama. So, yeah, this I can definitely.
Are we allowed to spoil?
I'm dancing around this one because
there's. If you haven't read the Dresden Files books, dear listeners.
Yeah.
I really don't want to ruin this. I want you to get up to these books and be unspoiled and be as completely blown away as I was by the things that come up, because it's awesome. As for you know, John, you're talking about if things go as they do mythologically, and I think my mind went in a completely different direction to yours, because the model I've always had in my head for Murphy and Harry has been that they are to my mind, they're basically modern day King Arthur and Merlin.
Mm.
You know, on one hand, yes, you've got the historical relationship, but on the other hand, lately I've been watching the last season of Merlin, so that mythological relationship
is
a little something different.
Yeah, your mind did go a little bit further. I'm going to stick to just the mythology that was discussed towards the end of this book and leave it at that. Mm. Because as we all know, there is a character that I consider my favorite. And damn it, why is there not a live-action movie series on this? Because I would love to see who they cast for a certain someone. But anyway.
I did scream that name as the plot unveiled itself. I was like, ah!
Yes. Right? There you go. So,
okay, I don't want to disenfranchise any listeners, but needless to say, this series continues to twist and turn, and I really can't say it's predictable, but they're not standalone novels. Each one does fold into the next.
Yeah, they do get more and more serialized as they go on.
Right, which is one of the minor nitpicks I have about the way that they are presented, at least on the cover. In the interests and of consistency with the original few novels in the series, which were far more standalone, they are just said, oh, a book of the Dresden Files, or they don't give you a numerical value. to let you know where it stands. And at this point in the series, if you were to pick up, you know, book 4 and then pick up book 10, it would be catastrophic because you would have a number of things that were spoiled, and never mind anything from 12 onward.
Oh, well, I agree. Yeah, when I was starting, I was one of the people that played catch up. I think I started picking up around book, I guess the equivalent of a book 11 or so. And yeah, I had to make sure that as I was, you know, I picked them up from the bookstore until later issues I had to get online. But yeah, I had to go back and, you know, do what you used to have to do. You have to go open, you know, the front thing and see the different books in the series and make sure you're getting them in order. So, because you don't want to botch it up.
Yeah, there's really, that's the only way to do it other than, you know, having on your smartphone, bringing up the Wikipedia guide to tell you what
guilty,
the order is. Yeah, exactly, because certainly I've done that too. But yeah, it doesn't say it anywhere on the cover. So yeah, just, you know, be forewarned, you need to do a little bit of homework to make sure that you don't ruin anything for yourself. But it's one thing that's very nice is that there's not a whole lot of spoilers out there. You really have to go looking to spoil yourself, so... I would definitely say that's a recommended series. You've heard us talk about the Dresden Files so many times on the show. And we were very happy to have that book come out. And we're all very sad that it's going to take a while for the next volume to come along.
That's the worst part about catching up on the series is that I can't read new one every other month. Yeah.
Yes. So what can you do? Yeah. As far as Buffy goes, though, Gary, I think we've said it a few times, but your comparison to Babylon 5 is not inaccurate. The first season of Buffy was very much a test case type of season. It's good enough, but it certainly is not the benchmark that future seasons would become. The second one takes a nice, huge jump leap forward, and yeah.
Yeah, judging Buffy based on the first season would be like judging Babylon 5 based on the quality of the first 12 episodes.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean it's a fairly good comparison. There's, you know, a couple, maybe 3 or 4 episodes that are pretty good, but there's plenty in there that are just very, very average. And the pilot for all that it is that it gets the ball rolling is pretty rough. Especially compared to what the show becomes later down the road. And the second season just has moments that you can't believe they actually went there when they finally do. So, yeah, stick with it.
Okay.
It picks up. We're not lying to you.
I've already bought all the seasons. So,
so one way or another, you're watching those suckers.
Exactly,
I got you.
Exactly, yeah. So.
All right. Any other things you wanted to bring us up to date on?
I started playing a card game with the family called Munchkin. it's simpler than, I'm trying to think. It's harder than an Uno, but it's simpler than a Magic the Gathering. It has, in a sense, you know, you have, you know, characters that you play and they get weaponry that you can use against them, but it's a very simple, straightforward system. It's not, there aren't many rules to it so much as, you know, you get a player and then he's got, you know, a +1 this, a +2 that, a +3 that. And, you know, when you go against somebody, you just, you know, okay, he's got 5, he's got 2, you win, so, and you move on. So it's something for the kids to play. We've been trying to come up with different games. We've gotten sick of Uno. We've gotten sick of Monopoly. We've gotten sick of a lot of different games. And so we're on the hunt for something new to, you know, keep everyone interested. And this was recommended to by a friend of mine, Susie from How to Grow Your Geek. And I'm glad she recommended it. It's still a little challenging for us. We're still sort of getting things down. But it's by no means a complex gaming system, so we're enjoying playing that. And they have a bunch of different themes that they go with. We chose to start with the Star Munchkins theme, which has, you know, laser guns and things of that nature. It's almost Star Trek without needing licensing.
Cool. Certainly anyone out there with their younglings of their own might be interested in that.
Oh yeah, I mean they have westerns. They have, you know, a standard one. There's a zombie version out. They have about a vampire version. There's about 10 or 12 different varieties or flavors, and they're all interchangeable. So you can pretty much actually have several different sets and play them together if you'd like.
Cool. All right then, Bronstone. We already kind of started off with you talking about sunbathing indoors because or baking, as the case may be, from the inside out, microwaving. What else have you been up to down there?
What have I been up to? There's been a bit of rewatching and rereading and catching up on some things. I reread the book World War Z to wash the taste of the World War Z trailer out of my mouth.
Imagine that.
It is still an absolutely brilliant book, one of the best zombie fiction things I've ever had the pleasure to come across. Just a really, really inventive framing device for a lot of little narratives with a very personal style. Yeah, it's fantastic. I highly recommend that anyone listening who hasn't already read it, go pick it up. What else? I've been in drips and drabs. I've been rewatching a couple of shows. I wound up powering through the first season of Person of Interest because I got the DVDs for Christmas. So that was good. Turns out on the DVDs there is an extended pilot, but it's not as good as the actual pilot because they didn't edit as much. So yeah, who knows? And I've been rewatching some episodes of Gary, block your ears. Some episodes of Lost. I warned you. And you know, yeah,
Evangeline Lilly was in it, so I had to suffer through it just last night. So. That was
close. Well, you're going to hate The Hobbit too.
Yeah, right.
I'm up to the fourth season. I've been rewatching Drips and Drabs for a while now, and it's still holds up. It's still a really, really awesome show. It's not perfect, but there's just a lot of great characters and great performances and brilliant details and ideas that you know, come up even on the upteenth rewatch of an episode, and there's still room to come up with, you know, wild theories about the hows and whys of things in the midst of just enjoying some really, really good character-centric storytelling. In terms of new stuff, I got caught up on the first 8 episodes of a show called Wedding Band, which is not genre, but I don't know if anyone else here has watched it. I'm gonna say something that I never in a million years thought I'd ever say, but this is the show that kind of makes you want Brian Austin Green to go up to the cast of Glee, kick them in the crotch, and say, "That's how you incorporate musical performance into a television episode." Booyah!
Booyah!
No! I'd actually watch that. So yeah, kicking the cast of Glee and beating.
Sadly, they don't do that in the actual show. Mm. But it is, I know, it's sad. But yeah, it's a show about a bunch of middle-aged guys who have pretty decent band, and they play at weddings and stuff like that. And it's got a comedic bent, and it's got Brian Austin Green, it's got Harold Perrineau, I think, I forget mm-hmm. how you pronounce it, but from Lost. You've got, and I'm totally blanking on her name, she played Jan in the American version of The Office, and you had the demon girlfriend from Reaper, and then plus a bunch of really, really good guest stars. And it's like Party Down Light for anyone who watched that show.
Okay, yeah.
And I've just been really, really enjoying it. And they have musical numbers, but for legitimate reasons, because these guys perform at weddings, and then while they're performing and at weddings and stuff is when things happen. And it's pretty darn funny. It's not going to set the world on fire, but I'm enjoying it. I've caught up on a couple of movies. I don't think I mentioned this last week, but I saw Les Miserables on Boxing Day, so the first day it was out, and just loved it to bits. I thought it was a really, really brilliant, such a well done adaptation of the stage musical, and there were some weak points. I think Russell Crowe is not nearly as awesome as you'd hope, for considering that he's playing Javert, but Hugh Jackman was an amazing Valjean, and yeah, Anne Hathaway's big moment was her performance of I Dreamed a Dream, when I say performance, not just singing the song, but she's acting a scene, like the camera's right there in front of her for the whole performance, and it's just absolutely phenomenal. Like, just I can't think of anyone I know who I've talked to who has seen the film who is not just like, yeah, just give her the Oscar now, please. it's pretty darn fantastic. And I finally saw Perks of Being a Wallflower. I haven't read the book of that. I thought the film, as a coming of age teenage high school story, it was okay. As a really introspective story about a character, a young person who is grappling with you know, genuinely serious issues, even when they don't necessarily realize that they're doing that, I think it worked far better when it was concentrating on those things. So it was pretty good, and yeah, that'd be about it. That's what I've been doing.
Cool. So how was Emma Watson in that Perks of a Wallflower, or of Being a Wallflower, whatever the damn thing is called?
She was solid.
Okay. Cool.
Although, mind you, the Ezra Miller was playing her brother, and he stole pretty much every single scene he's in.
Okay. Interesting.
It's worth seeing the film for him alone, because it's just insanely over-the-top awesome.
Hmm. Very good. I'll have to look that up. Okay. Wow. All right. So, yeah, it's definitely... one thing we always talk about is trying to start a rewatch of Lost, and then we usually wind up on something else, which is kind of ironic when you think about it. Let's see.
You make that sound bad.
All right. Edmund, you have been kind of out on the outside looking in, because you are still at the very beginning, if at all, of your Dresden Files journey.
I have actually started Stormfront, but just a little ways in, but enjoying it immensely so far. So I was just sort of going la 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 in the background while you were talking earlier. one thing that has kept me from really delving into Dresden is I have now finished book three of Game of Thrones, or Ice and Fire. You know, it's definitely a great relief to have finished before season three and four come along, since I now know just how jaw-dropping the season three and season four finales are going to be. No, I will not spoil anything. I am well into book four, and had a very odd experience, which is what led to me talking about mentioning books in the opening, that I had actually misplaced my e-reader for a day or so, and had bought that box set of the paperbacks that, you know, they'd very foolishly put Sean Bean's picture on, or very cannily, you might say, put Sean Bean's picture on. So I actually had to pull out the paperback, and was reading the paperback and thinking, you know, the quality of this paper isn't so good, and, you know, why can't I adjust the font to be a little bit bigger so read it better? So it was an interesting experience to actually go back to reading a book when I've been reading stuff on the e-reader for the last few months or so, and discovering that, you know, yes, technology does have its advantages, and I'll be very happy when the FAA realizes that we can read them during takeoff and landing too.
You know, oddly enough, they've approved iPads for pilots to get rid of their those big cases with charts. Yeah. They've already done the testing. They've approved it. I've talked to pilots from several different airlines, and they said, yeah, they got warehouses of them. They're just, you know, they're just waiting for the final nod to give okay, even though American Airlines is already using them. They keep like four on every airplane, and I'm like, okay, wait a minute. It's okay for the pilots to have four right up front in the cockpit, but me sitting over the engine wing can't have it, you know, the guy away from the sensitive electronics.
I've always found, and I don't want to get off on too much of a sidetrack on this, but I've always found that to be a rather non-compelling argument or requirement, because let's face it, number one, they let you have your phones on while they're taxiing at this point.
Yeah.
So how much can it be interfering with anything? Because it would have, But then the second thing is that, you know damn well, most people don't turn their stuff off. They maybe put it on airplane mode or any of these things.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you know enough about, yes, maybe if you had a cell phone actively receiving or sending an RF signal right next to the instrument, maybe you would have an issue in the most slightest chance. But no, I really don't think that. I think it was more one of those things where they had no idea whether or not it was going to be a problem, so they just blanket said that, and now they don't want to go back on it because they don't want to seem like they were being ridiculous. But especially now that they've had people trotted off the plane for not turning off their phone or something, you know? But I see people that are, you know, it's the end of the flight. Probably worse than taking off is, if it was going to interfere with something and be a problem, it's while you're landing.
Oh, yeah, so, absolutely.
You know, you're supposed to turn all your stuff off, and I see people trying to hide their phones, still playing or listening to music and stuff like that. they've got everything wide open and on the entire time. It doesn't do anything. But anyway.
The only thing, I just don't want to sit next to the guy talking to somebody for 2.5 hours. So that's the only reason where I will say, well, maybe it's not the end of the world.
Well, it's one thing to be using it for, you know, like a like an iPod or something like that, or an e-reader, and another thing entirely to be on the cell phone, because
on the phone.
Yeah. That's just plain annoying. Because I've been on a bus where there's somebody that just decides they're going to have a really long conversation the entire time at maximum volume, and people like that will get thrown out of the plane while it's in midair. Trust me, it'll happen. At any rate, yeah. So, sorry, I didn't mean to derail.
Well, you guys don't bring spare parachutes every time you go on a plane?
It doesn't usually fit in the carry-on luggage, unfortunately.
No, not anymore. Not with the
yeah. Now that you've got all these electronic devices in there.
Yeah, exactly. As I said, I'm working on that. I'm thinking once I get through book four, I will probably take a break and move on to other things like Dresden. I actually do have some tech stuff that I've picked up. Recently started, I'm not shifting everything to the cloud, but I started investigating some of these different cloud services and discovered, since I got the Android and I'm like, you know, very hooked into the whole Google universe, that Google Play will actually doesn't have size limits. They actually will let you upload up to 20,000 songs. There are certain formats that they don't like to stream, but I've been uploading a bunch of my stuff into there, and have actually now, for Christmas, it was one of those things where my mother said, well, get something you need, even though I don't know what to order, so get it, and I will pay for it. So I picked up a couple of Bluetooth speakers, one big sound bar, and another portable one, so that I can pull stuff up on my phone or my tablet, and have it playing right there next to me or wherever I happen to be, and rather than using the tinny speakers or having to go to the earbuds, and actually been a lot of fun being able to just scroll through my collection that way. I know this is something some people have been doing for years and years and years, but it's new to me, so it's a nice resource to have, even though I'm still very old school. When I have my Bonnie Raitt albums that I'm used to listening to on cassette, it's like, no, I pull up the playlist and play it from beginning to end, just like it's an album. So
you're not the only one.
I'm used to hearing those songs. This song is supposed to come after that song.
the construction of an album is very much a lost art, I have found.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And I've actually heard, it wasn't Bonnie Raitt, but another, I think it might have been Lucinda Williams talking about that, how, she grew up, and, the way she grew up, it's like, no, you build an album, it's supposed to be in a certain, a certain order. And, that's the way she still plans her stuff out, even though all these people are downloading it song by song. But yeah, it is. I think it's definitely a lost art amongst some of the younger musicians.
Well, yeah, I found that, it's not even necessary. I guess it is younger musicians, but there were a couple albums that came out in the last year or so. And the ones that come to mind right off the bat are the latest Keane album and the latest Evanescence album. Completely different genres, obviously, of music. But what they have in common is that towards the end of the album, they both have songs that kind of strike you as being the perfect closer song. It's a little down tempo. It's kind of brings all of the themes of the album to a relative close. It wraps it up, and then in both cases there are songs that come after it that just completely undermine that feeling of cohesion. It's like, did you not actually think about how you were ordering these, or did you just kind of throw it together because you figured people were just going to download individual songs anyway?
Mm-hmm.
That does bug me, because there are other albums where it's very obviously constructed the way that it is. Like, I would say just about every album by Muse is very carefully constructed to achieve a certain thematic cohesion. So, yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, I mean, I also, this isn't recent stuff, but since I do actually still have a turntable and a cassette deck and a CD player, I've actually kind of enjoyed some of the record companies like Nonesuch, where they give you the different options of where, with some things you can actually get, all three formats, you know, for, you know, nowadays, of course, and when it's vinyl, it's, you know, it's all, you know, high quality vinyl, thick platters, and, you know, very, you know, very well pressed and mastered, you know, and through the right equipment, it still sounds pretty darn good. So. Yes, I'm one of those people who does say that vinyl sounds warmer and richer, but you have to pay a lot to get it to sound that way. So.
Well, yeah.
I agree with you too. Unfortunately, as you said, the choice of even getting vinyl for most albums is impossible, and even some of the older vinyl, it degrades over time, and it's most people don't take, you know, nobody's keeping this thing in a, you know, humidity temperature regulated room. They're keeping it in a back closet somewhere, and so yeah, it loses some of the fidelity then as well. So, but you're right, it does sound warmer, and unfortunately, it's a lost art.
One of the things I was reading this on a music blog some years ago, even, and I'm sure it's even more true now, and I definitely notice it now that I've had it pointed out to me, but a lot of the music produced these days, especially by the major labels, is it's all made to fit into the dynamic range of the compression that you get on most MP3s for iTunes, and so it really sounds oversaturated a lot of the time. It's not properly mixed because it's made just very generically. It's not made necessarily for the music. It's made for the consumption. So what they do now even is that they, because it's so often being downloaded instead of bought on a physical CD, they make the version for the download and then they just put that onto the CD. So you're not even getting what you would have gotten 20 years ago on a CD. The music on older CDs actually sounds better than the versions that you could buy now. Because of the way that they, you know, they quote, you know, master it and everything else, is that they're just doing it cheaply. They're not going to have different versions to maximize the what you can get on that particular medium. They're going to do what they can. Now, when they press it to vinyl, they have to make certain concessions because of what you need to do to put it on vinyl. So you're going to get a better, more rich musical experience from that. But as you said, Gary, the problem is that it's not really available. And these days, just to get a turntable that's even remotely good is a bit of a search.
Oh, and as a side note to everyone listening, a turntable that plugs into a USB port is not a good turntable. Dispel that notion.
No, because it's going to run into the exact same problem. So, it is unfortunate because, like I said, now that I've been told that, I've noticed – the difference between something that's done by the artist and released, or an independent label and released, versus a more commercial label. And there are some albums that are by people that really, you know, they sound much better, and you can tell how the production has completely ruined it.
Right.
Especially if you listen to anything and it sounds like the bass is way too loud for the mix. How many albums have we heard like that in the last 5 years or 10 years even?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. But anyway, I agree. There is definitely something that's been lost. I know that when I got my first iPhone and I was going in, I guess when iOS was updating around that same time, you could, on the older iPods, you could shuffle by song or you could shuffle by album. It was very, you know, it was built into it. Now you really have to go through a few hoops just to be able to shuffle by album.
Right. That's one nice thing in Google Play. It does still have the album and artist and, you know, not listings and not just song.
Right. Yeah. Because it really annoys me when, you know, especially some of the older albums that were certainly built to be listened to in that particular sequence, to be listening to it in my, and suddenly it'll jump to another song and it's not what I'm anticipating to come up. Especially if it's a very jarring genre shift. It's like, okay, wait, no, sorry, I had that on the other setting. Why did you put it back to this? Knock it off. All right. Let's see. Anything else?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I'm kind of surprised that for once, apparently I'm going to be the first one to bring up comics. you know, since going to Comic-Con in October, you know, I have sort of finally jumped into this world of digital comics and Comixology, and So I, a while back, when the last issue had came out and they were having a special on the full run of Garth Ennis's The Boys, I had downloaded that. Partially, you know, it was one of those things where yes, the name kind of attracted me. It's my, you know, it is my last name, which, you know, yes, I'm sort of revealing that on this show, but it's easy enough to find out anyway. but it was that, and then when I read the premise, I just had to take a look at this thing, and it is a, you know, absolutely wild, scabrous, raunchy, ultra-violent look at you know, what having superheroes actually exist in our world might mean, and was a heck of a lot of fun. I actually literally just finished issue 72 last night, and you know, as I say, it is very adult, very mature, but for anybody who's been into superhero stuff and like seeing a new take on it, you know, I mean, I don't know, say sort of, you know, heroes if Larry Flint had but yeah, I mean, that was quite a wild ride, and a lot of fun.
Yeah, I guess I might as well start with comics myself as well, and I had mentioned that I had started reading The Walking Dead comics just out of the curiosity to see how things have diverged, and managed over the space of maybe 3 weeks to read all 105 existing issues of it.
Yes, I've seen your postings. I'm like...
Yes. So is my therapist, trust me. that is one of the most disturbing things ever.
I told you that's what happened the first time around. I had to stop reading it for a while because it was disturbing me so much.
Yeah. Every time that things start to work out just a little, they go horrifically wrong even more than before. And the current arc that they're on is one of the most gut-wrenching things that they've done yet. I certainly won't spoil anybody because I have no idea if they're going to do any of this on the show. I certainly see how they could move from where they are now and roughly how they could pace out the other storylines that they've done on the comic so far in the series over the next few seasons, and it would translate fairly well.
Now you can be as equally as frustrated as we are when they tamper with it.
Yeah. Well, there are some cases, and even what's interesting is reading the letters page after each one, because, you know, Kirkman does give his comments to stuff, and you can see the evolution over time of when the show first came out, and then he was addressing very directly differences. And in one case, there was a something that happened, and for those who are up on the in the comic series, it's what happens in issue 100, that specifically was done because he felt like the TV version of a certain character had long eclipsed the one in the comics, and he just couldn't keep going with the version in the comics anymore. So yeah, bad things happened. Extremely bad things happened. So yeah, it was quite a ride, but it was almost like the Dresden Files problem where I got to I caught up with everything and I went, oh man, now I gotta wait.
Yeah.
This thinks, but it's good stuff. It definitely can be the kind of thing that won't get out of your head right away, because you just know that these characters are going through the gauntlet yet again, and once you get used to some of these characters, you start they start to resonate a bit with them, and you don't want to see these bad things happen, but of course they do, because this is The Walking Dead and nothing good ever happens. Let's see. Speaking of really big, long series out there, if you think that you'll wait for the conclusion of the game of the Song of Ice and Fire for a really long time, fans of the Wheel of Time series are finally rejoicing, because as of the time that this goes out, the final volume of the Wheel of Time, A Memory of Light, finally came out this past week, and I am currently about... less than 100 pages away from the end of the penultimate volume, Towers of Midnight, which I've been reading for the last couple weeks. I'm definitely looking forward to eventually getting through to the end of this. The last couple books, thankfully, have rapidly accelerated the pace of the plot, which really wasn't all that difficult since Stagnant was kind of where it was at for a while. It's really good to see all these things coming to a resolution, and it's amazing to me that after 13 books going to a final volume 14, I still really don't know how it's all going to end. I just have no idea. You'd think that there would be plenty of hints and stuff along the way, but really, it could go any number of ways at this point. And I like the fact that it's not predictable, because big high fantasy things like this tend to fall into predictability after a while. Before that, let's see, or concurrent with that, actually, I guess you could say, which will lead me into the next topic, was I, because I've been flying around for business, and there are periods when I cannot read my e-reader, see our previous discussion, I had been given by the author, whose name I cannot pronounce, one of the co-writers for the Mass Effect trilogy of games, during New York Comic Con back in 2011, they were giving out copies, because he was signing them, of Mass Effect Revelation, which is the prequel to the first game. And so I'm roughly a third of my way through that, and it's fairly entertaining. It's interesting to see the little things that are referenced in the database, or the or stray conversations that you may or may not even have, depending on how you choose to play the game, then get fleshed out in this book. It's largely the backstory of one of the characters that is a supporting character in the first game, but it is an event that is somewhat important to the overall story. So, speaking of, I'm replaying Mass Effect. I'm on my second playthrough because I got for Christmas the Mass Effect trilogy for the 360. And rather than just go right into game two, since I've already played game one, I wanted to start over fresh and just be able to play through it at a fairly good pace. So I've been having a lot of fun with that. And what I find interesting is the first time I played, you know, you can either craft your character and her decisions, since I play as a femme ship. I was intentionally going for Renegade rather than Paragon, because it was just more fun. And this time around, I said, you know what, if I'm going to play all three games roughly sequentially over time, I'm going to play more naturally. I'm not going to try to get one or the other. I'm just going to play the way that, you know, as each situation comes up, I'm going to play it the way that it hits me, you know, not go for a certain thing, but just react as the situation dictates. And I'm getting Renegade even faster, I think, than I did when I was intentionally trying to. So that just tells you right there.
What a shock.
I know, right? Hey, wow, look, there's an option to be a complete jerk and sarcastic. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Anyhow, along with that, I'm still playing on the PS3, despite the fact that I have Assassin's Creed 3 sitting right there. I'm still playing Final Fantasy 13 Part 2. It's just really fun, and I love the combat system. It's basically Final Fantasy meets Pokemon, which it's a lot more fun than that sounds, but my kids get a big kick out of it because they love the Pokemon games, and they're like, I can't believe that you're playing a Final Fantasy Pokemon game. I was like, yeah, pretty much. But it's fun to level up the monsters that you capture and just unleashing hell upon things, and it's neat. The story is not nearly as obtuse as people keep saying that it is, although it is a time travel story, so I can kind of understand why a lot of people get a little bit turned around on it. But I think it's a fairly straightforward story. One of my other big things for Christmas was that I got a PS Vita. And despite the fact that everybody keeps trying to say that the system is dead, there are tons of games for it out there. And thankfully for the PlayStation Plus members, there are a few free games on that service right now. And so rather than jump into the Uncharted game or the Assassin's Creed game, I just wanted to kind of on a lark play one of the other free games that came out called Gravity Rush. And I love this game. It is great. It's basically a platformer, but you control gravity, so you wind up kind of going all over the place and flying around, and it's kind of a superhero story, but with a very almost Studio Ghibli type of aesthetic to it, to the point where all of the dialogue is still in Japanese, and they just have subtitles. So, yeah, it's definitely got a very interesting style to it. It's a very strange, but very Japanese type of story. But it's a lot of fun, and I get a real kick out of it. I love the Vita. I think it's a great little piece of technology. I'm really looking forward to playing the Uncharted and Assassin's Creed games, even though I know that there are some people out there that say that they're not that great. It's still this seems like a great platform to play with, and also knowing that the entire PSP library is available, or most of it anyway, to play on the system also makes it very nice in terms of that semi-backward compatibility, because, you know, obviously the UMDs that were on the PSP are not usable on this, but you can use the digital versions of the games and download those. But yeah, I got it on a great deal. I won't lie. If I had been paying the full price that's out there, I would not have gotten it probably. But if and when they reduce the price this year, because I think they're going to have to in order to get more people to buy the things, it's not a bad system to have. I certainly think that I'll be putting a lot more time into this than I ever would a 3DS or even the DS that we have here. I just get tired of having to squint my eyes at the really bad resolution of a DS screen. But yeah, I it all depends, because my kids, of course, we have the main TV that has the 360 and one of the PS3s on it. And between my son and his Skylanders Giants game and the Lego games that they got Lego Lord of the Rings, which they're playing the heck out of, Lego Batman, the first one, Gary, not the second one.
Oh, okay.
And, Lego,
it gets better.
Yeah, Lego Star Wars 3, the Clone Wars one. And right now they're just playing the Lord of the Rings one because they're definitely in that mood from watching The Hobbit. But they're having a great time playing that. But it means that basically the main console TV is being used most of the time when I'm home. So that's another great reason to have the Vita around, because I can go ahead and kind of chill out and play on that instead of having to come down here into the studio / basement, or whichever order you want to put that in, and play on the PS3 down here. It gets a little isolating after a while. But yes, it was nice to have a little bit of time off. I had some time off from work before I had to start traveling again, so I was able to get some gaming in. Oh, and those damn Steam sales are going to kill me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. They put all these games out that you know you eventually want to play. They make them really cheap, and then they just sit there on your thing because you never have time to actually play them. But I will, damn it, sooner or later. Anyone else get caught up in the Steam sales?
I
did it first, and then I've learned to just stay away.
Right.
I was going to say yes. I've fallen prey to them a few times, and I'll use the word fallen prey because I don't think I've played a quarter of the ones that I've purchased.
Right.
Exactly.
But one day I might. Yes, as you said, John. One day.
Well, I mean, the one thing that I will say is that most of the games I have on there are from things like the Humble Indie Bundle type of things, where you're basically giving a certain amount of money to charities in order to get a whole slew of games, and you can easily get a dozen games out of those for whatever it is that you choose to give. And I usually give $10 or $20 and devote the vast majority of that to the charities. So I don't feel like I'm getting ripped off in any way, shape, or form, but there are certainly some games that I've gotten directly because of a Steam sale where it was, you know, $4.99, and it's like, well, geez, that's cheaper than I'm going to get it in any other format. Mm-hmm. And yeah, then it just kind of sits there. Because I never quite have time. Usually if I'm on my laptop, I'm not playing a Steam game. I'm usually doing some kind of work or editing, as the case may be. Can't imagine what that's for. But wow, that we covered all kinds of things there, certainly. And hey, if you are listening to this, and we're about to tell you plenty of ways to get back to us in terms of feedback, tell us what you got over the Christmas break, or what you were doing, and what games you're playing, what books you're reading. Give us other ideas of things that we can do, and so when we have another round table down the line, we can talk about that. Certainly, we are always looking for new and exciting things to delve into. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there's also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for this show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that critical misuse of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...